For decades, Boeing was the gold standard in the aviation business, but that reputation took a huge hit with two disasters, the Lion Air crash in 2018, in which 189 people died, and 5 months later, an Ethiopian Airlines crash that killed 157. Both malfunctions occurred less than 20 minutes after takeoff, and in both cases, the plane was Boeing's new 737 MAX, which was subsequently grounded around the world. Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg was called to testify before Congress.
We can and must do better. We've been challenged and changed by these accidents. We've made mistakes, and we got some things wrong.
A new book by Bloomberg investigative journalist Peter Robison explores a host of factors surrounding the crashes. It's called Flying Blind, the 737 MAX tragedy and the fall of Boeing. Recently, he joined Scott Tong to talk about the book.
And first, just remind us, what was the immediate proximate cause of these two crashes?
The immediate cause was that a sensor on the left side of the plane called an angle of attack sensor started providing faulty data to a piece of software called the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. And this software, in response to that, pushed the nose of the plane down in a way the pilots weren't expecting because they hadn't been told about the MCAS software in the manual. This was considered by Boeing as something that would operate in the background that the pilots would never see, but they hadn't fully accounted for this potential failure.
Yeah, the upshot is that these pilots were not required to train on this new software.
That's right, and the reason for that is that training is expensive. The MAX is actually the fourth version of the 737, and Boeing wanted pilots to be able to move into that plane without simulator training, which would have been costly and disruptive for airlines.
Now, you write about the families of the victims, including the parents of Samia Stumo, who died in the Ethiopian Airlines crash. How did these families help push forward the investigation into what happened?
The families were really critical. Nadia Millerone and Michael Stumo are the parents of Samia Stumo. And Nadia Millerone happens to be the niece of Ralph Nader, who obviously is someone well-versed in the ways of Washington. After the second crash in Ethiopia, in which their daughter died, they met with 50 Congress people and really pushed back against the message that Boeing was sending, which was still, after the second crash, that essentially pilot error was as much to blame as Boeing.
Yeah, and these investigations, of course, came. And you write about what you see as broader issues at Boeing over the years. You argue that the culture collapsed. So let's go back. What was the early culture at Boeing of being, as you describe it, an engineer's first company?
The culture at Boeing was really created by the greatest generation, the World War II generation. It was collectively focused. Boeing had, it still has, large unions, a machinist union and an engineers union. And the people who created the jets that really ruled, you know, the golden age of jet travel were people who came out of World War II. And one of them is a man named T. Wilson, who at one point in the late 1970s was one of the highest paid executives in the United States. He made $1 million, adjusted for inflation. That's about $5 million today, which is not even close to the average for CEOs.
And then, as you write, things changed. Boeing merges in the 90s with McDonnell Douglas, an aggressive defense contractor in Washington, D.C. What happened to the culture then?
It was really the decline of the engineering culture. I was the beat reporter for Bloomberg at the time, and I covered a 40-day strike by engineers who framed their strike not primarily over wages and benefits. They really saw the company then as not making the investments needed in commercial airplanes, because it's such a long-reaching business. You design a plane over 10 years, and then you have to live with the consequences for the next 50. And they were fearing what came next. There was a CFO at the time who talked about not getting overly focused on the box, which even then, when I heard it, was chilling. When you think about the consequences of not getting overly focused on a commercial aircraft and its design.
Wow, not getting overly focused on the box on the plane. And then you write an executive comes in from GE and delivers, this is kind of this famous GE model from Jack Welch of making the shareholders happy, making Wall Street happy, maximizing profits. How did this show up in the development of the 737 MAX?
It happens over time, and the airplane business is a very long-range business. So Boeing has been led by GE executives really since that McDonnell Douglas merger. The former McDonnell Douglas chief was a protege of Jack Welch. The next CEO who ran Boeing, Jim McNerney, was a protege of Jack Welch. The current CEO of Boeing, Dave Calhoun, is a protege of Welch. And the approach is really to focus on services, on moving manufacturing overseas and outsourcing manufacturing. Mm. The approach is financial engineering. And really, it's about share buybacks, which sound arcane. But what that really means is you're taking a huge chunk of the profits of the company and delivering them straight to shareholders in the form of buybacks and dividends.
Wow. And as you write, during the development of the 737 MAX, one insider says, "I'm not sure if my family should fly this plane." There's another key person, Mark Forkner, a pilot who worked on manuals and, you know, seemed very loose-lipped with his internal emails. What did he find and say?
Mark Forkner is someone who's drawn a lot of attention because he was saying the quiet part out loud the whole time during the MAX's development. He said he was using Jedi mind tricks to get the FAA to approve Boeing's preferred training. He talked in denigrating ways about the skills of pilots overseas. He even turned down a request from Lion Air for training ahead of the crash in Indonesia. But he ultimately was also following the orders of management. It was management that was pushing to do this. And in a way, he was responding to the pressure in the way all the employees at Boeing were responding to those same pressures.
Yeah. Well, the investigation into the crashes also turned the spotlight on the regulator, the FAA. I mean, we've heard a lot of cases in Washington of industry capturing its regulator. Did that happen here?
It did. And again, this is something that happened over years. You have always had the certification of the airplane, many of those tasks delegated to the manufacturers, primarily Boeing. But what happened over the last decade and a half was that the guardrails came off. It used to be that the FAA appointed the deputies at Boeing who were going to be approving key pieces of the airplane. Instead, to save money, this is partly in response to Congress starving the FAA and other agencies of resources. So to save money, the delegation was outsourced in a broader way to Boeing, and those deputies became appointed by Boeing, and the FAA had less input into who they would be.
Now, any response to your book yet from the FAA or from Boeing?
The Boeing and the FAA declined to comment for the book. I've heard from many engineers and former employees from Boeing who said it's spot on, Boeing and the FAA.
Hmm. At the end of your book, you have a disturbing quote. You compare what happened to Boeing to the explosion of the Challenger space shuttle. And you write that by all accounts, a cultural reckoning like the one that followed the Challenger disaster never took place at Boeing and its regulator. Is that the situation now? Has anything changed as we speak today?
The FAA appears to be taking a stronger hand in the certification of the newer Boeing airplanes. However, Michael Stumo and Nadia Millerone heard from a whistleblower at the FAA who said that one of his managers had told them that despite an aviation reform bill, people at the FAA should expect little change in their jobs, that this was posing for the cameras. And we even since the congressional hearings and the departure of Boeing's previous CEO, the current CEO suggested in an interview with the New York Times that overseas pilots were still to blame for both crashes. Mm. So I think the jury is out.
And finally, just looking forward, Boeing is bringing back the 737 MAX. What's the future of this plane commercially, and in your view, is it safe?
The commercial prospects of the plane are severely hampered. When I started covering Boeing 20 years ago, it had two-thirds of the narrow-body market. At this point, after the crashes, Airbus now has two-thirds of the narrow-body market. The MAX is getting some orders, but that's partly because Airbus's assembly lines are sold out. in terms of whether it's safe, the particular problem with the MCAS software has been addressed. There are other issues that FAA specialists had pressed for. That includes shielding around the rudder cables in the case of an uncontained failure of one of the engines and a fan blade being expelled. That's just one of them. In terms of the statistics, the MAX has flown about 200,000 flights since it returned to service. And last year, there was one fatal crash for every one in 3.7 million flights. So again, the jury is out. For me, I'm going to wait.
Peter Robison is an investigative reporter at Bloomberg, and his book is Flying Blind, The 737 MAX Tragedy and the Fall of Boeing. Peter, thanks for the time.
Thanks so much.